been in New York State, and 1,600 of those deaths have been in New York. I think it's important to consider the magnitude of what's happened. We have gone in the month of March from, you know, a couple of hundred cases at the beginning of March to over 250,000 cases in the country. So this has been a remarkably rapidly progressive infection that's actually spread through the country, and New York remains kind of the epicenter. And Montefiore Health System has been an epicenter within an epicenter. Montefiore Health System, we now have over 1,400 patients in our hospital system who are known to be infected. And basically about two-thirds of the people that we test now, who are mostly hospital-based people who have symptoms, will test positive for this virus. So we are being hit with a large number of patients, an enormous burden for clinical care, and this has resulted in the health system opening up beds in a variety of places to manage these folks. Not only our hospitals, but we've converted some parts of our children's hospital where there's less in the way of elective care, in fact, no elective care there and just emergent care, into a couple of adult wards, and we have pediatricians who are helping to manage adult patients with this viral infection. We've also opened up a number of ambulatory sites for inpatient care for people who are infected at the Hutchinson Metro Center. We will probably, in the course of the next week, have to open up additional beds to manage the surge in patients that we expect. There are a number of things that are ongoing in clinical care, obviously, but also on the research side, and Dr. Porofsky is going to talk to you a little bit about some of the research, but we're doing both fundamental research to try and understand how this virus works, but also to develop new therapies for this virus, either in the form of small molecules, antibodies, or cells, and Dr. Porofsky will tell you about some of the groundbreaking work she's doing in using plasma for patients who've recovered. Our medical students and other staff are volunteering throughout our system to help support those who are providing care, and in fact, we have several volunteer medical students who've actually joined clinical care teams in CHAM, the Children's Hospital, right now. Our students are also volunteering to help out with babysitting and house sitting the first-year medical students for house staff and attending physicians. They are working doing telemedicine in a number of our clinics, both the occupational health clinic, as well as some of our clinics that take care of people in the Bronx, who obviously we can't see face to face, but they're managing their chronic diseases over the phone and in some cases in video conferencing. We also have medical students who are working on the research side. They are manning some of the machines that actually do the testing for the virus in our patients. And finally, we have students who are doing using 3D printers to manufacture personalized protective equipment, in particular face shields, and they're doing that on both campuses. So exceptionally proud of the entire community, exceptionally proud of our students who've actually jumped in and really contributed in a meaningful way in managing this surge. So kind of the update from my perspective, and now I'd like to introduce Dr. Lizanne Porofsky. Proud to say she's a classmate of mine. She is a professor of medicine and is the chief of our Division of Infectious Diseases at Montefiore and Einstein. She's an internationally renowned leader in infectious disease, and importantly, at this moment, is a leader in a number of innovative studies that are trying to address this viral pandemic. She's been one of the organizing leaders in trying to put together this study that's using plasma from patients who've recovered from this disease as a therapy for those who are sickest with the disease right now. So without further ado, I'd like to just introduce Dr. Lizanne Porofsky. Lizanne?
Hello, everyone, and thank you, Dean Tomaselli. I have to say that I am just incredibly honored to have been in the same class as you, and I want to thank you for your leadership at this really treacherous time. It's really helping us stay grounded and do the very best we can. So as Dr. Tomaselli mentioned, I am the chief of infectious disease here, and We are absolutely overwhelmed in terms of our clinical capacity. It is nothing any of us could have ever imagined, and we are doing the absolute best that we can, and I believe that we are making a difference. I would just like to point out before I begin to talk to you a little bit about what we're trying to do therapeutically, that people go home every day. Patients are getting better, and it's something that's very uplifting for those who are on the ground taking care of patients. And it may not get as much coverage in the media as... could I ask people to mute their phones, please, because I'm hearing personal conversations and it's distracting me. I'm so sorry. Okay. So I thought that what I would do is tell you a little bit about the concept of using plasma from people who have recovered from COVID to try to help patients who have COVID now. There are many different therapeutics that are being considered for the treatment of COVID. And I would like, though, to focus on this. The reason I'm focusing on it is that it is a historically validated way of treating patients very rapidly in the midst of something awful to try and cure them. And this mode of therapy called antibody-based therapy or convalescent serum therapy or convalescent plasma therapy, all the same word essentially, was used in the 1920s and 30s and into the 1940s before the development of antibiotics. And it was really the first antibiotic, and it was something that was extremely effective in treating pneumonia in patients during that period of time. That concept has been carried forward in many different ways over the years and was somewhat not accepted as much when antibiotics came along. An antibiotic is something that you sort of deliver. It can knock out the organism and helps the patient get better. The way antibody therapy works is that the antibody works in different ways on the organism, but the most important thing about it is that it helps the person kind of fight the infection on its own. It is a way of enhancing the person's own immune response to the infection. So with that sort of as an introduction, I'd like to just go through why this isn't a vaccine, how it works, the steps that we've been taking to try and bring this not only to Montefiore, but everywhere that we can, and then to tell you what sorts of ways in which we could use help in getting this off the ground. So antibody-based therapy is a form of what's called passive immunization. What I'm giving to my patients is a little bottle of antibodies that work against that organism that they have. In this case, it would be the COVID virus. The way a vaccine works is it is given and the person has to make their own antibodies. And that takes time and that takes a certain level of testing. That is why Dr. Fauci has been saying that we are a year or a year and a half away from a vaccine. We are weeks away from the ability to give convalescent plasma to patients. Why is that? Because here in the New York area, as you've heard, with the epicenter being in New York and also largely around Montefiore, our communities in New Rochelle, Westchester, Rockland, others, we have many, many people who are recovering from COVID-19. And not only are they recovering, but despite the enormous personal strife that they have encountered as a result of being sick, as a result of the attention that was focused upon their community, they have been absolutely courageous and united in coming forth and saying, we want to help. And so this week, we went to the Young Israel of New Rochelle. We recruited a number of people who have recovered from COVID-19, who are at least 2 weeks away from their symptoms. We took samples from them with their permission, and we are studying their samples in the lab right now to see whether they have antibodies to the virus. And then those that have antibodies to the virus will receive the feedback that they are a suitable donor, and they will go to the blood bank and they will have their blood taken to make it into plasma, which means removing the cells. And we will have a bag of antibodies from each person who goes through this process that we can give to a person who is sick. And I just want to double back that on for a second and tell you how absolutely uplifting, heartwarming, sustaining it has been to see the response of not only the New Rochelle community, but so many communities. The number of people in this country who have recovered from COVID is many, and everybody is reaching out. So the reason that I'm emphasizing this is that unlike a form of therapy where we could go to our shelf and we can take off a drug that is there, we need to produce this product from people. And we need to stock our blood bank, the New York Blood Center, with plasma so that we can give it to patients. And until we get through that stage, we won't have anything to offer. So I want to underscore the importance of these recruitment efforts, and hopefully the pipeline will be sufficient for us to be able to get enough plasma in the blood bank to treat our patients and other patients in New York City. So that is the overview of this. So the way it works, just to sort of recap, is that the antibodies in the blood of people who have recovered are antibodies that we have every reason to believe could help a person who is ill or has impending illness get better. And that the way that we need to do this is to find those people and to be able to obtain their blood to be able to make it into our drug, which is the antibiotic. So there are a number of different approaches to deploying, that's a new word, in our pandemic, this plasma. So we've received a lot of requests from families and loved ones of desperately ill patients. And while there is always the possibility of so-called compassionate use of this compound or mixture of antibodies, our hope is to be able to conduct clinical studies that would allow us to compare the efficacy of the antibodies from people who have recovered versus something, to be able to really have hard data and evidence that this is working. And the reason that is so important is I'm sure that if you're following the news, you're hearing about a lot of things, hydroxychloroquine, inhibitors of inflammatory mediators, and the desperation that everybody feels in taking care of these patients has put us in the position of feeling that these things are worth trying. What we are attempting to do with the plasma is to take a two-pronged approach where we are able to treat patients who are very ill on a compassionate use type of protocol, but at the same time conduct clinical trials in people who are moderately ill to minimally ill to try and avert the development of severe disease. And the logic for that is all of the respirator use that I'm sure that you're hearing about, ventilators, and also as a public health measure to try and stop the spread, flatten the curve, whatever term that you might want to use. So just to repeat, this is a two-pronged effort to be able to do this. I'm really excited and happy to report to you that the FDA has issued INDs, investigational new drug permissions for compassionate use, as well as for the prophylaxis use of convalescent plasma. So those two permissions are the result of an enormous amount of work from a completely grassroots movement. A group of people has come together. One of them is Arturo Casadevall, who as a colleague of mine who was the former chair of microbiology here at Einstein. He's now in the Bloomberg School of Public Health, and me as well. We have worked on antibodies since we were in Maddie Sharpe's lab. I don't even want to say how many years ago. And this has been the coming together of many, many brilliant people, and it's been extremely heartwarming to see. But it's cost something. We are sort of parasitizing our existing resources to be able to do this. I just want to mention two other parts of this that are part of the very heavy but worthwhile lift that this is, which is that part of the determination of whether somebody is going to be a good donor or not is how much antibody they have in their plasma. So Kartik Chandran, one of our absolute leaders and scientists and at Einstein, who is a absolutely renowned Ebola and other hemorrhagic fever expert, has been working with us. He turned on a dime to be able to develop a way of detecting the antibodies in the serum. And as we speak at this moment, he is running his initial tests on the more than 100 people who we recruited to be potential serum donors, plasma donors, excuse me, over the last few days. So I think I will stop there, and because I could talk about this forever, and I don't want to take all of your time, and answer any questions that you might have, or Dean Tomaselli, if there's anything you would like to ask me that you feel I haven't covered, I think I'll take those questions now.
Thank you, Dr. Porofsky. So there are a few questions that have teed up, and I'm not going to take them in order because I want to take them in order of relevance to your discussion. So one of the questions is, once you have COVID-19, are you then immune?
Okay, well, that is a very good question, and I'm going to give you my favorite answer, which I advocate highly, which is, I do not know. Available information would suggest that generally when we have an infectious disease, we develop an antibody response that protects us against it in the future. This is a new virus. This is a new disease. And so we really don't have data at the moment to suggest that that is true. I will say, however, that the early returns on the presence of antibodies are very, very encouraging. And the early returns from China on a deeper form of protection from other forms of cells would suggest that there will be immunity. I think our question is going to be how long it will last.
Great. Thank you. Another question is, how close are we to testing the public, American public, for COVID-19 antibodies? Is there a strategy for getting the economy moving using such a platform?
Right. So those are two fantastic questions, which are obviously connected. There are a number of platforms available that are coming online commercially and are being vetted in numerous clinical laboratories, including our own, to be able to test the presence of the antibodies. These tests are sort of like a pregnancy test. Most of them have like a spot. And so they don't give you an amount of antibody, but they tell you whether antibodies are present. And we are vetting those against our other tests to see how much antibody that means. Long story short, it is reasonable to think that antibody testing is a really good thing to do, and that as long as we feel that the presence of antibodies confers immunity, then that's a great combination. I will also say, without editorializing, that it is very clear that the testing for the virus has numerous complexities, not the least of which is that the test is not always positive in people who have early disease or minimal disease. So that the option of being able to look for antibody is very, very attractive, especially because it would be a two-pronged thing, because it would document that the person had the disease, and that is absolutely the case here because this is a new disease. Those tests react. There are other coronaviruses like the common cold, but most of those tests, from what we know so far, do not cross-react with those, so that we feel pretty confident that they're positive because of COVID. So I believe that this is a strategy that will be adopted going forth, and I think that it makes sense. It's kind of interesting for me to hear myself say that, however, because in general, for the past 50 years, the use of serology like this has not really been an accepted way of making diagnoses in real time, because generally it takes a very long time, like 4 weeks or longer, for a person's immune response, those antibodies, to really mature. What's interesting here is that we are seeing very high titers of antibodies after 7, 14, a short period of time. So it's interesting that this also, this approach of vetting people and feeling comfortable about immunity is also something that is very deeply returning to the past.
Great. So there's another question here. You referred to the timeline for the development of a vaccine. A related question, what other therapeutics are currently available, and has there been any relaxation of government regulations to enhance either utilization or discovery of potentially new therapeutics?
Okay, so that has a number of different parts. There are a number of other agents that are in clinicals. So we don't know, there is nothing that has been validated to work against this virus at this moment in time. So there is no agent that there is hard scientific evidence to say that it works, like penicillin works against pneumococcal pneumonia. That said, there are a number of agents that are in clinical trials. The probably the most far along is remdesivir, which is an antiviral agent originally developed for Ebola, where it didn't really have much efficacy, apparently, that is being used. We are actually one of the centers, we're one of the first centers to be enrolled in a trial of remdesivir. It is a randomized control trial that actually met its recruitment, but they decided to expand it. We should have some data from whether remdesivir works or not soon. And there are a number of other modalities to inhibit inflammatory mediators, but I would say that right now, there is really nothing that I could tell you that has been proven by any means to work against the virus. Doesn't mean there aren't things that are going to, but those studies are in development. As far as relaxing of regulations, what I would say is that there has been fast tracking. So certainly with the plasma, after 1 month, there are two INDs that have been issued by the FDA, which is extremely encouraging. As far as relaxation of other things, I do not know. I'm not the expert in that area.
A couple of other quick questions. So is there any promising therapy for people who may have been exposed in preventing disease?
Right.
Preventing serious disease. And then I'll ask the other one afterwards.
Okay, so we believe that convalescent plasma may be perfect for that. The reason is that antibodies tend to work best when there's very little of the agent around early in disease. So actually one of those INDs I mentioned is to use it in prophylaxis and in treatment of early disease to try and prevent that. I'm sure you've all heard of hydroxychloroquine. There are trials going on to determine whether hydroxychloroquine works in that setting or not, and hopefully we will have some data on that soon. The hope, obviously, with how devastating this disease is to be able to intervene early, which not only helps the individual patient, but it also helps the public by reducing transmission.
Maybe two other quick questions. One.
Okay.
Many patients are on cardiac medicines that bind to the receptor for this virus. Is evidence one way or another that this makes the disease worse in these people or may be protective in some cases?
There is evidence, although not high quality evidence for both. It is an important area that is beginning to be investigated in a scientific way. And other than that, I cannot really comment, except for to underscore what you said. These are very, very complicated, physiological circuits, and there truly is data in both directions. I will say, however, that there is definitely a myocarditis, an infection of the heart, that this virus can cause, We've seen numerous cases of it in our center. That's independent of these drugs, but the virus does affect other tissues, and it would appear that the heart may be one that is particularly vulnerable to infection by the virus.
That being said, as a cardiologist, I would admonish everybody, if they're on these medicines, to continue to take them, not to stop them in this circumstance, because it's
I was waiting for Dr. Tomasali to say that, because I don't have the credentials, but absolutely, there's been a lot of confusion, and do what he says because he knows.
And Lisa, one final question. So the Times published an article this week dealing with unprecedented cooperation between members of the scientific community. And can you comment on how Montefiore and Einstein are working with colleagues at other places in New York and around the country and around the world on this problem? And that's a good place to end it.
Oh, absolutely. And so in addition to, the amazing collaboration with the community that I mentioned before, what's been going on at the scientific level has just been like, it's been like an oasis. People are reaching out to others. We are working very closely with other colleagues in the city and for information, for help, for vetting our protocols. I mean, we're scared. We're doing things, we're making decisions based on no data, something that's completely new. And what I would say is that what this pandemic has done, as far as medicine and science are concerned, is it has shown how much we need our brains, how much we need to problem solve, and how finally we are absolutely stronger together. And the diversity that comes from reaching out, we reach out every day. We were considering changing one of our treatment protocols. We reached out to 5 other centers, and within 10 minutes, they're back in touch with us. So thank goodness we do not pay for cell phone minutes, and we really have developed an amazing community of scientists and researchers, and it's been another one of the very heartwarming things that I thank whoever for at the end of each day.
Well, with that, I'd like to thank Dr. Porofsky for sharing some of her comments and time today. She's exceptionally busy, as one could imagine. I also want to thank her on behalf of the scientists, the students, and our patients, most importantly, for kind of the tireless work she's been doing around COVID-19. And I want to thank everybody for joining the call today. And remember, we're here to help and answer any questions that you might have about COVID-19, about what Montefiore and Einstein are doing clinically, what Montefiore and Einstein are doing on the research front. So again, thank you, everybody. Stay safe and really adhere to the admonitions of the CDCs and others to keep physical distance, hand wash, and be safe. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.